Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. John Steele here. In this episode, we are going to talk about some of the main talking points from round 5 of the J2 season from last weekend. To help me out and talk about some of the key things really is Stuart Smith. Stu, how are you doing?
I'm very well. You suddenly went a bit high tone there.
It's the excitement.
It's the excitement times politeness. I do like it. Yeah, I'm doing well, John. How are you doing?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. Thanks. Do you think we've survived the threatens of power outages in Kanto today? Because I think some power stations are offline because of the earthquake last week. So hopefully nobody turns the lights out or the mics off for the next 30 minutes or so. But yeah, I think we can get straight into it, Stu, if that's okay. As usual, we're just going to talk about three of the big round 5 games from the weekend. So I'll start you off with a 5-goal thriller, Stu, up in Yamagata, where it finished Yamagata 2, Sendai 3, in a game which is definitely not a Tohoku derby, as you've explained on Twitter very eloquently. But Sendai up into second place in the table now and still unbeaten so far this season. The game was 1-1 at half time. Ryoma Kida put Sendai in front in the 21st minute on a quick counter-attack. But 10 minutes later, Taiki Kato converted Shintaro Kokubu's cross for 1-1. And then there was a crazy few minutes early in the second half. Stu, first, Sendai went back in front when Keimen Togashi's kind of low and weak cross trundled along the floor into the penalty area. And you're just not going to get away with that when Masato Nakayama is around, are you? And he pounced to rifle the ball home from about 6 yards. So it was a 2-1 Sendai. But just 2 minutes after that, it was 2-2. A pretty horrible mistake from the Sendai keeper, Daichi Sugimoto. He spilled across straight to Yoshiki Fujimoto, who made no mistake from close range. So 2-2 early in the second half. And then in the 64th minute, Stu, I've written here, Yamagata must have borrowed Jeff Chiba's self-destruct button because Kokubu played a loose back pass, which let in Yasushi Endo. He nicked the ball past Seiji Kimura, who was the last Yamagata defender just before he got there. So he made contact and brought Endo down. Net result was a red card for Kimura and a free kick on the edge of the Yamagata box for Sendai. And from that free kick, Endo produced a stunning effort to make it 3-2 to the visitors. And that's how it finished, Yamagata 2, Sendai 3. For Yamagata, just one win from the 5 games so far, and that leaves them 14th in the league table, which is still too early to rely on, I suppose. And just one other note before I get your thoughts, Stu, Sendai boss Masato Hanasaki was actually absent from this game, wasn't he, after a positive COVID test? So his assistant, Kentaro Yoshida, was in the dugout on the bench for this one. And it's been announced, I think, today that Sendai have 6 sort of first team players or staff with positive COVID tests this week. So hopefully that doesn't lead to any postponements and everyone's doing well and recovering. But it's something to keep an eye on. Stu, Sendai in second and going well. Do you think they're looking good for the playoffs? They're letting in quite a lot of goals, but they're scoring a lot as well.
Yeah, I think, like you mentioned there, the table or league table is still in its embryonic stage. But when I watched this game, I was impressed with Sendai's work rate. Like, they don't have any stars in that team. The front two in the game against Yamagata were, as you mentioned, like Keimen Togashi and Masato Nakayama. Both of them are kind of hustle and bustle kind of players. They're not usually the players that you can bank on 20 goals a season from, but they give you a mobile presence and they give, like, it might be a bit of a cliche, but they make the defenders work for their money and you don't really get a moment's peace from them. I think always with Yasushi Endo in your team as well, he's a really, really good player and he's kind of, the free kick is just like sumptuous. It's not going to, the goalkeeper can't save it, the wall can't defend it. It's just almost the perfect free kick. So I'm impressed with them to a certain point, but I think back to the opening day against Niigata where they were completely outplayed but managed to come away with a 0-0 draw. And yeah, this game they won against, well, they obviously scored the winner against 10 men. And so I think a little bit of kind of hold your horses, like step on the brakes a little bit. But these points on the board early on, while other teams are kind of like trying to find their feet or trying to discover what kind of play works well for them, like it's going to be important come the season's end. And I think Sendai are one of the teams that low-key have a decent amount of squad to play with. So when they do get these inevitable kind of COVID positives, you'd think that they would have probably more chance than other teams to kind of like weather these storms and maybe put out competitive sides, even though they are under strength, or even though they are losing players from COVID. But yeah, it's to be seen, really. But they've had a decent start. I mean, they're second in the league, and I think they're a very J2 side in a good way, because they're set up to work hard and do the dirty work, and just basically profit off those kinds of things, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair points. Interesting variety of goals among the three they scored, weren't they? Like, really well taken free kick for the third, and then there was a fast kind of lightning breakaway for the opener, and then that kind of sort of fox in the box play from Nakayama for the second one. So I agree with you. They're looking like they kind of have quite a few different options in terms of how they can hurt teams. I'm still not sure any team with a Masashi Wakasa at centre back as a regular starter is going to be in the top two in any given J2 season. But yeah, they've started well. And they look good. You mentioned, as did I, that Yamagata went down to 10 men. Stuart, in this game, do you think that was the right decision? I don't think fair to say Peter Klimovsky, Yamagata manager, wasn't in agreement.
No, he wasn't in agreement. It's one of those ones where kind of objectively it ticks all the boxes for a red card, but somehow doesn't look like one to the naked eye. Like, I thought it was harsh when I saw it, but then when you think about the letter of the law, was he the last man? Yeah. Was it outside the box? Yeah. Was it a denial of a goal scoring opportunity? Probably. Like, I'm not sure Endo was going to get on the end of it, but that's really not an assumption that I can make with any sense of authority. And so those two things, like, it clearly was a sending off, but for me it didn't look like one. That was a kind of odd thing to reconcile in my head. But I think, yeah, it's the whole kind of be consistent, and that's what we want referees to do. And that was, in my opinion, that was a perfectly clear and legitimate red card. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with everything that you said. I think Klimovsky, from what I could just from watching the highlights, I think the on pitch or kind of side of the pitch microphone picked him up saying that, like, complaining that Kimura wasn't the last man. But I'm not sure who.
Well, technically, the goalkeeper was behind him, but yeah, that's not the.
Well, yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure Peter Klimovsky knows the rules of the game better than you or I. But yeah, I actually thought it was really clever play by Endo, to be honest, because firstly, he anticipated, or he got onto that bad ball from Kokubu, didn't he, to kind of start the attack, and then I think he kind of knew once he nicked the ball past Kimura that the contact was coming, as kind of experienced players do.
Yep.
And I don't think it was a dive. I want to make that very clear. But he just made sure that the contact came. And then he made sure that, like, he kicked up both his legs, when he fell down. So I think
he was being streetwise.
He's been streetwise, yeah. He was using him, he was making sure.
He's using his years of experience to make sure that the referee saw what happened.
Yeah, he won a free kick, yes, is what I'm saying. But at the same time, it was a foul. I think if you put that, you could have a VAR, you could have computers, robo-refs, and they would all end up with the same conclusion. So I think it's...
robo-refs.
Yeah, I'm on fire, on fire here. Yeah, I think it's just one of those where, the problem is really the bad back pass from Kokubu that put the whole team in trouble.
Yeah, Kimura has been, he's been incredibly hard done by there, because it's 90% not his fault.
Well, I think the main complaints, it seems to me, from the Yamagata side, where this is incredibly inconvenient and annoying, so please don't send him off, but not any sort of any legal, you know, any complaints with the actual letters of the law. So, on Yamagata real quick, Stu, any reason to be worried? I know they've got at least one sort of a foreign signing still to be integrated. I forget the name of the player, the striker.
Well, they've got two, right? They've got, didn't they sign another one? Della Forte. That's a great name, by the way. Yeah.
Yes, and yes. So
there was another Brazilian as well, coming from Poland, I think.
Is it too early to worry about Yamagata, then, you think?
Yeah, I think it is too early to worry. I mean, that was their first home game of the year. Obviously, being a northern Japanese side based on the Japan Sea, ish coast, they have to deal with a lot of snowfall in Yamagata, even going into February and March. So this was their actual home opener. Their next, I think, three of their next four games are at home. But having said that, I think without having the fixtures in front of me, I know three of the next four, they have to play Yokohama, Tokyo Verdy, and I think Okayama as well. So, I mean, you've got some not tricky. Those are difficult games. I mean, Yokohama and Verdy are in the top three right now. Again, I don't have the league table in front of me. I probably should. That's an amateur mistake. Apologies there. But I think, yeah, and Okayama are a decent side as well. And so, whereas now I think it is a bit early to panic about what the season may or may not hold for Yamagata. Mm-hmm. I mean, going forward, they still look really good. I mean, before the first goal, Kota Yamada's through pass was just beautiful. I mean, textbook Yamada picks the ball up from deep, sees a pass that no one else sees, and plays it into the fullback who crosses for Taiki Kato to score. The second goal was very, very lucky because, quite frankly, the goalkeeper, even the DAZN commentators tried to make an excuse, and then they looked at the replay and thought, no, he's just dropped that in front of a striker. And there are positive signs, but they don't look as dynamic this year as they do now. Obviously, they lost Hikaru Nakahara, who was so, so good for them last year. Then Kabayama, who was also on loan from Yokohama Marinos, he's not there anymore. Maybe when they integrate these two Brazilians into the side, they can give them a Vinicius Araujo-style forward to kind of work around. So I wouldn't be too concerned yet. However, they've got a difficult set of games coming up, so I think we'll learn a little bit more about who or what Monteiro Yamagata are in 2022 from these kind of late March, early April games.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, it could be good to me. Perhaps in a month or so's time we can reconvene and then panic or discuss, you know, depending on how the results have gone. I'll move you on, Stu, if that's okay, to another one of the kind of you know, talking points from the weekend, from round five. One of life's certainties repeated itself, didn't it, Stu? We've got death, taxes, and Jeff United throwing away winnable home matches every season. So this time, the game we're going to talk about is Jeff Chiba 0, Gunma 1. That's another 1-0 home defeat for Jeff after losing by the same score at home to Iwate back on the opening day. But we're going to try and keep it light and positive, Stu. So let's focus on Gunma. They've made an impressive start to life under Tsuyoshi Otsuki, which surprised me, certainly. They already have 8 points from the five games and conceded just once in that time, which is pretty great going. The crucial goal in this match was in the 7th minute when Shu Hiramatsu volleyed in a cross from Atsuki Yamanaka at the near post. This finished off a really impressive and well-constructed team move, I felt, down the Gunma left. But for me, the real star for Gunma again was their goalkeeper, Masatoshi Kushibiki. He made save after save to keep Jeff out in this game. And I think that's at least the second time I've noticed him turning in a sort of man-of-the-match level performance this season. So, can I get your thoughts on Gunma, Stu, and in particular Kushibiki, who I think has been great in goal so far?
Absolutely. Great pickup. And like you just mentioned there, they've only conceded one goal in their five games this year. And they've surpassed my expectations. I'm sure they've surpassed your expectations and most people's expectations. They look organized, and I think you wonder about the coach, and like when he came in, obviously he came in from a spell at Urawa where he kind of was just parachuted in as the head coach. He'd obviously worked in the team before, but the actual head coaching gig for him was kind of foisted upon him. And like, we never really kind of got a good look at like what he can do, like squad building, because in Urawa, it's a different level of squad building and squad manipulation as you have in Gunma. I mean, that's just a fact. And so far, the proof is there. The proof is there on the pitch. They have a really, really strong sense of belief. I mean, you know, on any other day, Jeff might have scored 3 or 4 goals, but the fact that people were throwing bodies in the way, Kushibiki's positioning was excellent all the time. Like, he came out for cross after cross after cross. He gives his defenders a lot of confidence. He's always been a good goalkeeper, but he's never really kind of established himself or kind of never really performed to his absolute potential, I think, because when he kind of burst on the scene first, like, there were high hopes for him to be like a national goalkeeper or whatever, but he just seemed to have bounced around from club to club to club, like, as as kind of Japanese players tend to do, to be quite frank. They sign 1 or 2 year contracts and they kind of don't put down roots very often. But I think that kind of what we're looking at with Kushibiki is just a continuation of his, like, he's just gained experience because he's been at Yamagata, he's been at Okayama, he's been at S-Pulse, decent clubs to be at, but I think he's only really established himself in maybe kind of in his second season in Yamagata, and that's kind of like 2 or 3 years ago now. So but good for him getting his career back on track, and yeah, good for Gunma to kind of look solid. I mean, because that kind of thing can go a long way. It reminds me a little bit of Tochigi and Kazuaki Tasaka a couple of years ago when they were incredibly hard to beat and they didn't concede many goals. And, you know, football's become a lot more open these days. So when everyone zigs, someone else has to zag. And maybe Gunma have thought, well, we lost Genki Omae in the summer. We can't outpower or blitz the opposition, so we've got to think of other ways that we can gain a competitive advantage, sign a good goalkeeper, get an organized defense, make yourself tough to break down. I mean, it's a long season. I mean, whether they can kind of keep this kind of form and this kind of defensive setup as stable as it needs to be throughout the season, when more teams have got data on them, more teams have seen them play, they have more time to figure them out, etc., that'll be a challenge for them. However, like I said with Regalta Sendai, these points in the bank now that other teams are scrabbling to fight around for can come in very handy come the end of the season. So I've nothing but respect for Gunma and what they're doing, because it's a difficult job that the owner she's got there, and, you know, full credit to him for setting his team up in a way that kind of gives them the best chance to stay in games and win games as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point all round. And I think there's an interesting parallel for me with Otsuki and the job that he's doing at the moment at Gunma, and also Takafumi Hori. And what's going on at Tokyo Verde. So we're not going to talk about Tokyo Verde in too much detail this time, but I do think you mentioned sort of squad building and expectation at kind of big clubs, mega clubs, the kind of Urawa scale. And I think the manager or the Kantoku there has to be able to wear quite a few different hats, don't they? It's not just about coaching the players and the players, but there's politics involved. And you might have players in the dressing room who are not as motivated by the thought of getting out on the training pitch and running round. And I think what you're seeing, this is a pure speculation on my part, but I think with Odski and Horry at Gunma and Verdi respectively, is they seem to be a lot more relaxed and enjoying it a lot more.
Yes.
Because there isn't that pressure from outside, but there's also probably not that much pressure in the dressing room. And you can almost imagine, and I know I would never say that not having Genki Omai is good for your team, but having a kind of big influence like that, not in the dressing room, I think that might have helped Otsuki coming in. You know, that he can set up the dressing room or kind of make the mood as he sees fit. You wonder about Yuhei Sato going out the door at Tokyo Verdi, and maybe or Ryoya Yamashita going out the door at Tokyo Verdi. I think maybe something similar is happening there as well. But all good for Gunma. Maybe that's something we can talk about in future pods. Jeff, Stu, really quickly, they have had three home games so far, haven't scored in any of them. What are they doing wrong, apart from being Jeff?
That's the whole point, right? I mean, it's you just talked about Takafumi Hori and Otsuki for Gunma, like, thriving in an environment where there's less pressure on them and where they're able to give their teams and their squads kind of a real definition, so real knowledge about what they're expected to do. And I don't know, maybe Verdi will change going forward, because the more they play well, the more expectations will be placed upon them, or more will be expected of them, I should say. There's a difference between outside expectations and inside expectations. But Jeff, you know, just when you think that they've got just when you think they've got all the ingredients to give themselves a real kind of push, a real boost. I remember distinctly when I did the pod with James after the first game, we spoke about Jeff against Morioka, I think it was Iwate, yeah, and they lost that game. That was their opening game, and they lost it 1-0. Obviously they drew 0-0 with Yamagata, but I said losing to Iwate in a vacuum, or losing their opening game in a vacuum, isn't such a big problem. But if it preceded a run of games where they, say, 1-3, drew 1-3, lost 3, drew 1, or whatever, then it would be a problem. And that's kind of what's happened. You know, it's very difficult to figure out what Jeff are doing, especially at home. I mean, because they haven't scored a goal at home in three games, and they've played, all right, Yamagata are a good side, but you should be able to get at their defense. And it's the same for Iwate and Gunma. Like, they are good sides, they are organized sides, but when you have the capabilities that Jeff have, then you should be at least scoring goals, like, in your home games. And I think that's the interesting thing there. I mean, yeah, they kept Tomoya Miki, they brought in Koya Kazama, they've the Brazilian guy who
Roberto Soldado.
So, yeah, his long lost cousin.
Saldanha,
that's the one. Solomon as well. Like, they've got all these kind of decent attacking options, but for whatever reason, they just can't. They just can't get it together. And you know, they kept a league high 17 clean sheets last year. If that makes any regression, then they're going to be in trouble, because obviously, if you kind of regress in the goals against column, you're going to have to progress in the goals for column. And so far, that doesn't seem like it's going to be happening. But again, it's still early. But you're going to have to think that they're going to have some pretty kind of stiff tests coming up as well. I don't have their fixtures in front of me, so I don't know if they've got a murderer's row of games coming up in the next month or so. But you know, they've come away from an opening three games against a team that was promoted last year, against a team that is struggling so far without foreign players coming in, and now they lost at home against Gunma, who before the season people were expecting to be relegated. It just doesn't look particularly clever for them at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point. What I've noticed is Jeff tend to look quite organised and in control of the away games, and not so much at home. And I wonder if that's anything to do with the fact that they're kind of set up now to be a bit more of a kind of reactive and counter-attacking team. You can see, for example, Jan Mingyu, who did well at centre-back last season, he's been playing in defensive midfield for a couple of games this year.
Mm.
So that you're kind of adding more sort of defensive solidity to central midfield at the expense of creativity. And I think it's worked for them in away games where they can play on the counter and be quite reactive. But in home games, you know, against certain teams, if you sort of sit back and wait for them to sort of, you know, for holes to open up, they just don't. Against some of these, you know, well-organized teams, which Gunma are this season, for example. So I think perhaps the tactics might need a rethink in the home games for sure. And I think Jeff also, we should mention, they have a new Brazilian striker still to come in, don't they? Whose name completely escapes me. And I know you don't have it in front of you because you keep telling me what you have got in front of you. I don't ask what you have got in front of you. It's not the league table and it's not Jeff's fixtures. So yeah, let's keep it moving, Stu, before we get in any real trouble. One more game from round five for us to wrap up, and we're going to talk about Omiya 0 Tokushima 2, but we're going to focus on Tokushima this time, Stu, because I'm not sure we've got anything left to say about Omiya at the moment. Certainly nothing positive. They're bottom of the table, having picked up just 2 points from the five games so far. For Tokushima, maybe we can say now this is a quietly effective start under Danny Potatoes. Four straight draws, and then followed by this victory, leaves them in kind of eighth place. Early doors. Tokushima were in front in the 15th minute here when their captain Kazuki Nishiya swept in a loose ball from just inside the penalty area after some pretty half-arsed attempted clearance action from Omiya. After that, Mushaga Bakenga went close after Omiya had given the ball away in their own final third, something which was a feature of the first half, really. And at the other end, Atsushi Kawata missed what was probably Omiya's best chance of the game. He put the ball wide after he'd been set up by Masaya Shibayama. And it was 2-0 to Tokushima just before the half hour. Their Omiya centre-back Keisuke Nishimura clumsily brought down Nishiya in the box for a penalty, which was converted by Bakenga. We should say it's 3 goals in 2 games for him after he scored a brace against Kumamoto last week. And I think he has 4 for the season because he scored in the Levan Cup as well. So a pretty good start to the season for him. Omiya had a couple of decent chances late on, but I think Tokushima were pretty much given up at that point, and they held on for the win pretty easily. We know all about Omiya's problems, Stu, but we haven't really talked about Tokushima in depth on the pod so far this season. So, you mentioned you were quietly impressed with Sendai. How about Tokushima?
Yeah, I mean, this was the second time that I've watched Tokushima this year, because I watched them against Verdy as well in a home game that they drew 1-1, I think. And I was impressed with them actually against Verdy, and I was impressed with them again on Sunday? I forget the days all mould into one.
Saturday, J League
weekend. I'll tell you what they do have. They do have a very Ricardo Rodriguez look about them. At the moment, they play, ostensibly it's a 4-3-3, but you might look at it on the DAZN lineup as a 4-1-2-3. Holding midfielder at the base, and 2 forward midfielders, a couple of wingers, and Bakenga up front. So they can switch between Bakenga and Shota Fujio, which is not a bad way that you can kind of switch things up. The key to Tokushima's kind of the way Tokushima play are the wingers. So they've got Kazuki Nishiya, who's one of the best players in the division. Really like him. Can be very direct, and can drift inside because he's one of those inverted wingers. But he's also comfortable going outside as well. who plays on the left mainly, and on the right they've got Akira Hamashita as well. Both of them played for Tochigi back in the day, so they have a little bit of an understanding on what each other do. But when they stretch the field, so when they go 4-3-3 and Nishiya goes wide to the left, Hamashita goes wide to the right, it leaves the solitary forward, which in Saturday's case was Bakenga, which it can also be Shota Fujio, who's got excellent movement himself. It gives them a lot of space to work around, and when you have kind of intelligent players, which I haven't seen a lot of Bakenga, but he seems like he knows his role in the team and he knows where he has to be, then it can work out pretty well for them. They pressed and they harried Omiya, and let's be honest, this isn't the first team that have pressed and harried Omiya into mistakes this year, and so I think like they're going to have to really assess whether they are the team that plays out from the back. But Tokushima, after the first 10 minutes, really sensed that they are onto a winner there, and you know they played really well, and attacking wise they looked dangerous every single time they went forward, especially in the first half. I think like you said there, they kind of just jacked it in the second half and couldn't really be bothered doing much because they'd already won the game. But like, yeah, the two wingers are the real driving force between them. Should just mention as well, Eiji Shirai, the midfielder they brought in from Okayama, is a really good kind of player to have in the midfield. Really steady presence, good ball retention, good ball usage as well, which is important for the Poyato/Rodriguez system that they have there. And they've had a decent run of games themselves as well. I mean, this was their first win, but they're unbeaten, and similar to Tokyo Verde, similar to what I mentioned with Gunma, the team has definition. Like, you, when you look at it, you know basically what everyone is tasked to do, and when you have that, then it's very easy for teams to understand kind of where someone else needs to be. Like, if you need to press as a unit, if the forward kind of occupies one defender, if when, for example, when Shirai gets the ball, is their first instinct for Nishiya to hit the touchline? Is it the first instinct for Hamashita to hit the byline? Those kind of things. Poyato seems to have instilled, that's the phrase that I keep using, like definition. Everyone has a defined role. The team has a defined way of playing, and those kind of teams tend to do really well. So, I don't really want to touch on Omiya, but Tokushima looked very, very impressive, even though the standard of team they were playing against weren't that good.
That's all good analysis. I remember back in it seems like a long time ago now, but season preview territory, we mentioned how gutted Tokushima's squad had been in terms of players leaving. So for them to look so defined and so cohesive and smooth, five rounds in, is a pretty good achievement, and a pretty big feather in Danny Poyatos' cap, I would suggest, because they haven't looked like a team that sort of had so many new players coming in at once. And it's a tricky one to gauge, isn't it? Because on the one hand, before this game, they'd had four draws out of four, and that included like drop points in two home games, essentially. So that doesn't sound great. But then, yeah, now that they've got this win, well, then you can spin it as they're unbeaten in five, and they're kind of in the ascendancy. I think, they did what they needed to do to win this game. I think the way that Omiya played in the first half, like constantly getting caught, kind of playing out from the back, was a bit like, the TikTok of the dog that's got the stick in its mouth and is trying to fit through a gap. Fit through a door that's too big for the stick, but the dog doesn't want to let go of the stick. It's like, guys, you've got to do something different if you're getting caught by this press every time. So yeah, Omiya still got a lot to work on, I think, but Tokushima, looking upwardly mobile, and we'll see how they go in the next few weeks. Stu, at this point, we're going to take a quick break. When play resumes, you're going to hear just me rounding up the other games and the action from round five. But then after that, we'll be back together again to look through the round six fixtures coming up this midweek and this weekend. So, please stay tuned.
Extra time.
Hello everyone, me again with a review of the rest of the round 5 action from J2 last weekend. Yokohama FC lost their 100% record, but managed to hold on to first place in the league table by drawing 1-1 away at Okayama. The home side took the lead with a penalty in the 20th minute here. Takaya Kimura was brought down by Yokohama centre-back Katsuya Iwatake, and Thiago Alves scored from the spot. Yokohama FC had to wait until the 70th minute for their equaliser when a cross was whipped into the Okayama box. A combination of Felipe Vizeu and their home defender Yasutaka Yanagi headed the ball into the net. I actually thought it might have been an own goal, but it's been credited to Felipe Vizeu, so fair enough. Late on in the game, Ryoya Yamashita had the ball in the net for Yokohama FC again, but he was correctly given offside and the goal was chalked off. Even later than that, there was a superb double save from Okayama keeper Junki Kaneyama to preserve Okayama's point. Now, Kaneyama looks set to be the number one at Okayama for the foreseeable future after the sad news that, Togo Umeda, who's normally first choice, he's going to be out for probably the rest of the season with his cruciate ligament injury. So I hope he's back soon. But for now, Kaneyama is the man with the number one shirt for Okayama. So it finished at Okayama 1, Yokohama FC 1. Tokyo Verde a third, with Machida fourth, and these two came together in another edition of the Tokyo Classic at Ajinomoto Stadium, Tokyo Verde winning 2-1 on this occasion. Chon Teze missed a great chance to put Machida in front early on, one of several good opportunities he had on the day, but Verde went in front in the 36th minute, Ryuji Sugimoto heading in Ryota Kajikawa's cross. Kajikawa, by the way, having a fantastic start to the season at Verde. It was 2-0 on the hour, Sugimoto scoring again, this time touching a low cross from Taiga Ishira into the far corner after a quick Verde counter-attack. Machida pulled a goal back about 15 minutes from full time when a Machida corner went in after bouncing off a Verde player. I think it was Rihito Yamamoto, but I'm not sure, but it was given as an own goal. There was still time for Ryoga Sato to hit the post late on for Verde, so they nearly ended up winning 3-1. The game got very stretched at the end, but yeah, it finished at Tokyo Verde 2, Machida 1. Kumamoto's good start to life back in J2 continued with a 2-0 home win over a kind of wobbling Nagasaki, and Kumamoto won this game with two superb goals. In first half stoppage time, Yuhi Takemoto put the home side ahead with a cracking strike from almost 30 yards. And then 10 minutes into the second half, Koki Sakimoto put in a smart right-footed shot that went into the net via a combination of goalpost and goalkeeper for 2-0. Back in my day, I think that would have been an own goal because it touched the goalkeeper last, but let's move on quickly. Kumamoto had their goalkeeper, Ryuga Tashiro, making his J-League debut, and he made some really good saves late on. When he was eventually beaten by Ken Tokere's header, the ball came back off the crossbar, and I think when we saw that happen, we knew it was going to be Kumamoto's day, and it finished Kumamoto 2, Nagasaki 0. Real quick on Kumamoto, they also had a 15-year-old forward, Yutaka Michiwaki, named on the bench for this one. He didn't get any minutes this time, but we'll keep an eye on him as the season progresses. Iwate's opening J2 home game against Tochigi ended in a 1-1 draw with Yusuke Muta scoring a late equaliser for the hosts. We have to start by talking about the pitch here. There was heavy snowfall around Kitakami Stadium where this game was played, and the pitch was in a very poor state. I think most of the snow was gone, but there was a lot of standing water. The pitch was quite waterlogged, and this is kind of how Tochigi took the lead in the 28th minute when Tokach put in a shot from about 25 yards. The ball just dribbled to a stop inside the penalty area, and Yuji Senima was able to pounce on it and sweep past Taishi Brandon Nozawa for 1-0 Tochigi. Not the best advert for J-League football in terms of the pitch, to be honest. And yeah, the pitch made the rest of the game pretty hard to analyse, so I won't really try. But in the 88th minute, Muta rose highest to head in a swirling cross from Yohei Okoyama to earn a point for the hosts. Right at the end, there was still time for even more drama. Tochigi had a late corner, and I think it was Iwate's midfielder Kenneth Otabor, the Nigerian, he managed to head the ball against his own crossbar, and luckily for Iwate, it didn't go in. So it finished Iwate 1, Tochigi 1. Mito Hollyhock finally picked up their first win of the season, 2-1 away at FC Ryukyu, who are not looking great at the moment, it has to be said. Yutaka Soneda gave the visitors the lead in the 15th minute, slamming in a loose ball from just inside the penalty area. Mito then hit the crossbar shortly afterwards with a cross that nearly went in directly. Quite windy conditions in this game. It was 1-1 on the half hour. Yuki Kusano confidently finishing off a sharp Ryukyu counter-attack after Mito had given the ball away in centre field. The assist on that goal was from Katsuya Nakano. Mito's winner, though, came about 20 minutes from full-time. Kazuma Takai using his thigh to divert the ball past the Ryukyu keeper Junto Taguchi following a high, deep cross from the right flank. So it finished, Ryukyu 1, Mito 2. Oita and Yamaguchi drew 1-1 at the Showa Denko Dome. Very little quality in this game, really, until just after the hour. And then both goals came in the space of 3 minutes. In the 62nd minute, Hiroto Goya swept Oita in front from a Yuta Koide's low right-wing cross. And then, yes, in the 65th minute, a Yamaguchi corner was flicked on at the near post, where Takaya Numata was completely unmarked inside the six-yard box to volley in at his leisure for 1-1. And that's how it stayed, Oita 1, Yamaguchi 1. At the Big Swan, Niigata were too hot for Kofu to handle, beating their visitors 2-0. This game hinged on a couple of important minutes midway through the first half, I think. First, Kofu hit the crossbar through Motoki Hasegawa, and then just 2 minutes after that let off, Niigata went ahead. Eitaru Matsuda crossing for Kaito Taniguchi to sweep the ball home, and Taniguchi had an excellent afternoon, especially in the first half, leading the line for Niigata. It was 2-0 just 5 minutes later, thanks to a volley from Ryotaro Ito from just inside the penalty area. That left Kofu with a mountain to climb in the second half. The closest Kofu came to pulling a goal back was late on when Hasegawa managed to hit the crossbar again, but it finished Niigata 2, Kofu 0. Niigata finally getting their first win of the season after a quite shaky start. And last but definitely not least for round 5, in a very exciting game at Soyu Stadium, Kanazawa ended up beating their hosts Blaublitz Akita 3-2. After a pretty even start, Kanazawa found themselves 2-0 up after half an hour. Firstly, Sho Hiramatsu volleyed them in front from about 10 yards after Akita couldn't clear a cross from the right. That was in the 20th minute. In the 30th minute, Daisuke Matsumoto headed home a corner from inside the 6-yard box to make it 2-0 to the visitors. Akita pulled a goal back, though, straight after half-time. A long-range effort came back off the Kanazawa post. Taira Shige was quickest to pounce on the rebound and send a deflected shot past Yuto Shirai for 2-1. And Akita then levelled on the hour mark. Yuji Wakasa's teasing deep cross to the far post was touched home by Ryutaro Iyo, who was able to get his foot to the ball just before his Kanazawa opponent. So it was 2-2 going into the final 10 minutes of this game. That's when the final act came. Kanazawa sub Hayato Otani was in the right place when Akita once again failed to clear a cross, and he was able to send a low shot across Yudai Tanaka and into the far corner of the net for 3-2. Akita 2, Kanazawa 3, a cracking away win for Masaki Yanagishita's men. Okay, I think that's all the round 5 action taken care of then, so please stay tuned after a short break, short musical break. You're going to hear me and Stu previewing the upcoming weekend fixtures for round 6. Extra time. Welcome back, everyone. So with all of the round 5 action rounded up, Stu's back with me to look ahead to round 6. When I say look ahead, it's a bit of a complicated match day, isn't it, Stu, round 6? Because two games have been brought forward to Wednesday, March the 23rd. That's Tokushima hosting Akita and Oita hosting Ryukyu. That's because Tokushima and Oita have got Levan Cup commitments coming up at the weekend. I'm not really sure if I could make my disdain clear enough, but I'll try it. Hopefully that did the trick. But I also hear on the grapevine from Martin Spivey on Twitter, I think Akita have got at least one coronavirus positive case as we're recording this. So I'm not sure. I suppose that Tokushima game against Akita will go ahead on Wednesday, but might be in some doubt. Anyway, Stu, by the time the listeners hear this, those games will already have been either played or postponed. So we'll skip over them and talk about the other 9 fixtures, which are all coming up on Saturday, March 26th. That's because we've got the exciting midweek round coming up, right? We're next Wednesday on the 30th. So to prepare for that, all the teams are in action on Saturday. We have Iwate hosting Yamaguchi, Omiya hosting Okayama, Sendai against Machida, Yamagata against Tokyo Verde, Mito against Kumamoto, Tochigi hosting Jeff Chiba, and also Kofu entertain Yokohama FC. Niigata take on Gunma at the Big Swan. I felt like mentioning stadium name, and that's my favourite, so go with that one. And then last on the slate, but by no means least, Nagasaki against Kanazawa. Stu, have you got a game or two from the Saturday slate that you think looks good?
I think Sendai Machida will be good. Two good sides. We didn't. In my part, I didn't really mention Machida. I know they lost to Tokyo Verde, but they played well. I mean, Tonte Say had a lot of chances that he could have scored, but he didn't. I think that'll be a good game. Interested to see Tokyo Verde as well. Like I mentioned, with Yamagata, this is one of the difficult games that they have a series of coming up, because Tokyo Verde looked good, and you know they will provide a pretty stiff test. Obviously Seiji Kimura might be suspended, but I don't know, there's something to do with like he's away on international duty, so he's going to be missing anyway. But I think that that'll be a good game. I expect it to be a good game to watch, actually, because both the managers like to play good football and they're both kind of attack-minded sides. And I'm interested in Kumamoto as well. Kumamoto doing really well upon their return to J2. Obviously, they beat Nagasaki Monday, which was a public holiday in Japan, last Monday. They travelled to Mito. I mean, essentially a winnable game for both sides. So, but if Kumamoto can keep up their momentum, but Mito did pick up a win at Ryukyu last weekend as well, so yeah, probably those three games. I think I should mention Kofu as well. I think they need to start picking up wins, because yeah, the longer it goes on, the longer they get dragged into Omiya or Adija territory, and we don't really want to see that for Kofu. They should be in fifth, which is their rightful position. But yeah, those are the games I'm most interested in.
You're saying that Kofu need to start turning the JIT Recycling Stadium into a fortress, aren't you?
Yeah, more of a fortress. Yeah.
At the very least, an imposing stack of toner cartridges.
Amazon boxes.
Yeah, I think that Kofu game is a really good shout, because Yokohama FC have settled pretty well into life in J2, haven't they? Suspiciously well, perhaps some might say. So I think Kofu probably need to get winning quickly. I would add just real quick on top of that, Niigata, their home game against Gunma. We waxed lyrical about Gunma in the pod earlier, and they do look in quite good form. Niigata not so much, so you'd think, like, you know, last season that would be a sort of a home banker for Niigata, especially in the first half of last season, but I'm not so sure this time. Niigata could be asked a few difficult questions by Gunma, and it's obligatory now. I think we have to mention Omiya against Okayama. If Omiya failed to win again, or lose that game, then I think the coach Masahiro Shimoda will be under some, well, he's under serious pressure already, but I think that pressure could, the longer Omiya go without winning, that pressure is going to become unbearable, isn't it? So we'll see how that goes. But Stu, on that note, I think we can leave it here for J2. Thanks again for coming on and giving us the benefit of your analysis. You wanted to finish before midnight. It looks like we're going to just about do it, so it's very pleasing for me as well on a personal note. As we sign off though, please stay tuned, because in a moment after some music, you're going to hear, as usual, the J-Talk Short Corner segment. So it's all the latest J3 news from a very exciting second round of the 30th season, including a big win for, of all people, Sanuki. Please stay tuned for that. It's coming up in a moment. From Stu and I, thanks for downloading being a Patreon of the J-Talk pod if you are such people. And we'll speak to you again soon. Please stay tuned. Short Corner coming up now.
JTalk Extra Time.
Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J League. I'm not Mike Innes, as you can probably tell. I'm Stuart Smith, and I'm taking over for Mike just for this week, who I think has developed a bout of shock on the back of Kamata Marisaneki's goal spree this weekend. More on that later, but in this episode, I'll be looking back on the fixtures in round 2 of the J3 season and previewing games coming up in round 3. But first, some items of J3 news since the last pod. Now, there are some late additions to squads across the division to report on, signings that have taken place after the round 1 games. FC Imabari have signed Hayato Teruyama from Fugata Sendai on loan until the end of the season. Teruyama is 21, a centre-back, and has some first-team experience from Sendai since his rookie year of 2019, as well as having spent the last few months of 2020 on loan at J3 side Azul Claro Numazu. Matsumoto Yamaga's squad obviously wasn't quite big enough, rest assured. It's back up to 37 members now, with the signing as a specially designated player. That means he's also registered to play for his university this year, of midfielder Mao Hamano from the local Matsumoto University. And SC Sagamihara have promoted to their first team squad on a dual registration under 18 midfielder Kosumo Fujino. Alarmingly, for your correspondent at least, Fujino was born in 2005. Christ, that is young. Anyway, on to a review of round 2. And there were 3 round 2 games on Saturday the 19th of March. And going straight to the top of the early season J3 table are Fukushima United, who made it 2 wins from 2 with an away drubbing of Azul Claro Numazu. Ex-Numazu forward Junya Takahashi and Kota Mori both missed good chances to put Fukushima ahead before they did go in front in the 6th minute when, despite homekeeper Masataka Nomura executing strategy by shouting the word CLEAR, Shun Obu rose unchallenged to head in Hiroki Higuchi's corner kick. The match was concluded as a contest when Fukushima scored twice more in the closing 10 minutes of the first half. Numazu unable to defend a simple low ball into the box by Ryota Nakamura that was finished by Takahashi for 2-0, and then Takahashi turned provider, running Tatsuya Anzai ragged before delivering a measured pass converted at the far post by Hikaru Arai. Bad became worse for Numazu less than a minute into the second period, their defender Akira Osako wrestling Hiroto Yukie to the ground when nominally trying to defend a Fukushima corner. Osako got a yellow card for his troubles. Mori dispatched the penalty kick. And the scoring was wrapped up in the 83rd minute. Higuchi producing a defence-splitting pass that set up substitute Yuta Nobe for a one-on-one with Nomura, which he finished with ease for his first professional goal. Congratulations to him. Final score, Numazu 0, Fukushima 5. Fukushima now is 6 points, 6 goals scored, and none conceded from their 2 away games so far, but surely they won't have another match as easy as this. On the other hand, Masataka Imai's Azul Claro appeared in nervous disarray, their performance bringing to mind Kamatamari Sanaki's disastrous showings at the start of last season. And just when you thought things couldn't get much worse for Numazu, with their anxieties over funding and the keeping of a J3 license for next year, as part of the club's charm offensive to win local friends, there was a guest in attendance at the game in Heita Kawakatsu, the governor of Shizuoka Prefecture, and he's unlikely to have gone away with a particularly favourable impression of Numazu. At Nagaragawa Memorial Centre, FC Gifu righted some wrongs in their opening round draw by beating Ehime FC. Gifu took the lead in just the 5th minute, some tentative Ehime defending allowing Junya Tanaka to set up Tomoya Ugajin to fire home from 20 yards past an unsighted Kenta Tokushige. Ehime produced some pretty football, and at the end of a one move midway through the first half, Ryo Sato hit the post with Gifu keeper Kirihata beaten. But with less than half an hour gone, it was 2-0. Rookie defender Sora Ogawa unable to cut out a Kosuke Fujioka cross, which Junki Hata nodded in at the far post. With 7 minutes to go, Hata wrapped things up when he caught Ehime starlet Motoki Ohara in possession, advanced on goal and slotted coolly past Tokushige. Final score, Gifu 3, Ehime 0. Some clinical finishing by the home side, who took advantage of Ehime's errors to take the points. The visitors, without Ryota Moriwaki, lacked authority at the back. And is Riki Matsuda going to give them the cutting edge they need up front? Some things to ponder in Ehime. Two sides who won their opening day fixtures shared the points in a draw between Fujieda Mai FC and AC Nagano Parcero. Fujieda forward Tomoyuki Doi showed aggression and technique to put his side one up in the 37th minute, latching onto a Jun Suzuki through pass, bullying Hayato Ikegaya off the ball, then shooting inside of the far post of Kim Min-ho, who'd come on as a sub for Nagano netminder Soki Yatagai only seconds previously. Kim later produced a spectacular diving save to keep out a long-range shot by Suzuki, and at the other end, Keiichi Yama did well to block an effort from sub Takuya Akiyama, and the game looked as if it was heading for a Fujieda win until, with 5 minutes left, Tsubasa Sano's shot hit the hand of Yudai Iwama in the penalty area, and on-loan Machida midfielder Carlos Duke fired home the penalty. Final score, Fujieda 1, Nagano 1. Doi and Suzuki underlining their importance to Daisuke Sudo's Mai FC team. Parcero missing on loan striker Takuya Miyamoto, who's not eligible to play against his parent club, with a lack of attacking potency resulting. On to the games played on Sunday the 20th, and joint top of the division go Nagano's rivals Matsumoto Yamaga, who were winners at YSCC Yokohama. The first half was a close fourth affair that ended goalless, but Matsumoto went in front soon after the restart, Lukao seeing off the challenge of Kei Munechika and crossing for Ro Toyama to arrive unmarked at the far post and finish left-footed with some panache. Victor then produced good stops from Kento Dorate and Hiroto Miyauchi to preserve his team's lead, and in the 65th minute, substitute Ren Komatsu made it 2-0, beginning the move in the centre circle by feeding Kazuhiro Sato, and then advancing into the area to finish Sato's well-weighted return pass. The home side pulled one back with 11 minutes remaining, new centre-back Takuya Fujiwara heading in a corner at the far post, but the game ended YSCC 1, Matsumoto Yamaga 2. Now, YSCC only have a point to show from their first two games, but they are looking competitive while, whisper it quietly, Matsumoto appear to have held their nerve following relegation and are starting to play with control, organisation and confidence. Staging their first ever J-League home match were Iwaki FC, who welcomed SC Sagamihara to a very windy J Village Stadium. Only one goal in it at the end, but it was an incident-packed match, and if you're looking for a J3 anti-hero, an exponent of the dark arts operating in Japan's third tier, then maybe one player on show here was pushing himself to the fore. More of that in a moment, but there were mischances, good efforts, and great saves for the hosts. Hiroto Iwabuchi appeared to be brought down in the area, after which Shota Suzuki shot over the bar from 6 yards out. For the visitors, Yuan Matsuhashi's shot was brilliantly blocked by Iwaki's rookie keeper Shuhei Shikano, and a beautiful counterattack ended in Jungo Fujimoto shooting just off target when he should have scored, and the impressive Kensei Ukita had a shot against the bar. The goal eventually came with 15 minutes left, Iwaki captain Yuto Yamashita slinging a high cross over from the left, Kotaro Arima setting it up, and Suzuki hammering the ball into the top left-hand corner. Borova J3 bad boy, well, with the match moving into stoppage time, Riku Saga score in round one of Iwaki's goal at Kagoshima, enabled at least in part by his clear push on the covering defender, this week made his way into the penalty area and determinedly fell to the ground after a touch on his arm by the unfortunate Shogo Nakahara. The referee bought it and pointed to the spot, but Arima had his spot kick saved by Kentaro Kakui, and then he blasted the follow-up over the crossbar. Final score, Iwaki 1, Sagamihara 0. The home side riding their luck on occasions, but the reigning JFL champions don't seem to approach games with any sense of being just along for the J3 ride. Hiromasa Suguri's team are fiercely competitive. Sagamihara could have won this game on another day, and they too will be tough opponents for most or all teams in the division. There was some long-awaited good news for the supporters of Kamatamari Sanaki, who, at home to Gainari Tottori, saw their side score 4 goals in a league match for the first time since September 2020. Of course, they had to concede from a terribly defended set-piece, and Julie did so in the 11th minute. Keeper Takeo Takahashi coming to claim a corner he had no chance of reaching, and Yu Okubo heading into the unguarded net. Soon afterwards, Takahashi saved well from a speculative long ranger by Junya Suzuki, and Tottori came close again when Kei Sakamoto curled a lovely shot onto the bar. Kamatamari, however, pulled level 3 minutes before the break, Ikki Kawasaki's right wing cross finding Kohei Matsumoto in space to head past the exposed Koshiro Itohara. And in the second half, Sanaki ran wild, ably assisted by Itohara, who in the 52nd minute hurtled 15 yards out of his goal in a vain attempt to cut out a high ball from rookie Kanta Usui, only for Kawasaki to get there first and head in for 2-1. 14 minutes later, Gainari failed to clear a free kick. Kawasaki lofted the ball back into the box and captain Takaharu Nishino scrambled it over the line. And with the Picara Stadium announcer in danger of combusting, Sanaki went 4-1 up in the 74th minute, Takamagoto's powerful 25-yard shot being parried by Itohara right into the path of Matsumoto for an easy finish. Final score, Sanaki 4, Tottori 1, and Kamatamari didn't put on a great performance. They're not a great team all of a sudden, but they do have a goal scorer. Kohei Matsumoto, 27 years old, signed from the JFL, has 3 in his first 2 games. Very impressive. As for Gainari, they once again press the self-destruct button and have already conceded 7 times. Surely, Kentajiri is waiting to step back in as their first choice goalkeeper. For the visit of Katale Toyama, FC Imabari coach Kazuki Hashikawa made 5 changes to the starting lineup that lost in round 1, including a handing of a debut to new Brazilian forward Marcus Indio. And things got off to a great start for Hashikawa's team. Takatora Kondo in the 6th minute, robbing Shota Kawanishi in midfield and setting up Kazuki Nakagawa, who from 30 yards out centre perfectly judged chip over Toyama's standing goalkeeper Genki Yamada and into the back of the net. After 2 near misses by ex-Gifu forward Kawanishi and a further one-on-1 for Nakagawa, which he fluffed, looking bizarrely unconfident despite his earlier success, Toyama drew level on 65 minutes through substitute Shunta Takahashi, who got on the end of Naoto Ando's cross and volleyed in. Imabari went back in front with 10 minutes left, Hashikawa's protege Kondo lashing in a loose ball from just outside the box. And although a goalkeeping glitch by Haruhiko Takimoto almost handed Toyama a late equaliser, the game ended Imabari 2, Katari Toyama 1. An impressive response by Imabari to their disappointing round 1 defeat, but Katari's performance was reminiscent of the second half of last season when they were slipping out of the promotion race. Vanrare Hachinohe took a sensational 16-minute lead in their game at Kagoshima United. Home striker Koki Arita heading away a Hachinohe corner, only for Yuki Aida to hit a first-time screamer rising into the top corner from 20 yards. Aida's first J-League goal, and will he ever score a better one? For Aida's teammate, centre-back Kodai Fuji, however, the match will live in the memory for less positive reasons, as in the 37th minute, he was caught napping and conceded possession to Rei Yonezawa, who raced 30 yards into the penalty area before finishing past Hayate Tsutsu. The first goal of the season for one of the standout players of J3 2021. Going for the winner in the second half, Kagoshima's Romero Frank first hit the crossbar and then in the 77th minute held off Masanobu Komaki to beat Tsuta with a clever finish from just inside the area. Final score, Kagoshima 2, Hachinohe 1. The Smoking Volcano is able to exploit space more effectively than in round 1 against Iwaki. Hachinohe not clicking quite yet, and you wonder how long ex-Kagoshima forward Yusei Kayanuma will hold on to the main striker's jersey there. Finally, 2 star strikers got off the mark with their new clubs as Tegevajaro Miyazaki clashed with Giravance Kita Kyushu at the Unilever Stadium Shintomi. Former international Masato Kudo scored his first goal for Tegevajaro in the 7th minute, receiving a long ball down the left, getting the better of defender Takuya Inui and curling his shot inside the post. Kitakishu level things up 8 minutes before the break. Kotaro Fujikawa exploiting a gap in the home defense to find Ryo Sato, whose clumsy first touch bounced back off goalkeeper Shunsuke Ueda, giving Sato the opportunity to finish from 15 yards out, much to Ueda's embarrassment. Takuma Sonoda produced one of the misses of the season just before halftime, Miyazaki's new forward heading off target from just under the crossbar after a brilliant flick on by Kudo. But following a spell of pressure, the home side retook the lead on 67 minutes, a superb reverse pass by Kazuki Chibu, setting up Yuta Shimozawa to net his second in two games. But the goal-scoring hope of all Kitakyushu fans, Yuya Takazawa, concluded the scoring 16 minutes from the end, putting the finishing touch to an incisive counter-attacking move. Final score, Miyazaki 2, Kitakyushu 2, the home side maintaining the same attractive style despite close season change of coach, an improved display from the visitors Giravants, who showed far more attacking quality than they did in the opening round. Whew, so you're all up to date with the games. Let's look at the league table. So now to run through from top and bottom of early season league standings. At the top, we find Fukushima United and Matsumoto having 6 points from the two rounds so far. Fujieda and Gifu are on goal difference, the nearest challengers, among a group of seven teams with 4 points. At the other end of the table, four teams have lost both their matches and so have yet to get off the mark. Hachinohe sitting 15th, then it's Ehime, Tottori, and at the bottom, Numazu. Now, just time for a quick look ahead to the fixtures in round three. There are two games on Saturday, the 26th of March. Matsumoto Yamaga will look to continue their good start with their first J3 game at the Alwyn Stadium, but Kagoshima United will be the visitors and they will hope to spoil the party. And there's a clash of styles at Sagamihara where Miyazaki are the visitors. The other seven games are on Sunday, the 27th. Early leaders Fukushima have the chance to make it 3 wins from three as they host YSCC at the J Village. Gifu will be circling like vultures over the prospect of a trip to Numazu. Unbeaten Iwaki go to Ehime, who still need to start getting points on the board. Can Toyama bounce back from their round two loss? Still winless Kitakyushu head to the Japan Sea Coast. Yuki Stout's ambitious Nagano play host to Saneki and inform Kohei Matsumoto. Van Rauwe Hachinohe have had a disappointing start and in their first home game will need to cope with Fujieda's young gunslingers, and struggling Gainari Tottori will hope to find some positives at home to Imabari. So with all the week's business seen to, then that's it for this mini pod. All that remains for me to say is thank you for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.